You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome into the Locked On Pacers podcast. My name is Adam Friedman. As always, I'm a staff writer at IndyCornrows.com and one of the co-hosts of the Locked On Pacers podcast. On today's episode, I got a few things for you guys. The first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to disagree with Tony on the Pacers' performance against the Celtics. Then I'm going to give some stats on the Pacers' defense, give some probably pretty obvious numbers, but still going to give them to you guys. And then I'm going to end the show, preview tonight's Knicks game, and talk about some Tim Hardaway trades with the Pacers and why I think he should be traded for by this Pacers team. Let's take a quick pause and let's get to today's podcast. To start things off on today's Locked On Pacers podcast, I want to just disagree with Tony, and it's going to kind of lead to my second point that Wednesday's loss to the Celtics was the worst game of the Pacers season. I still think Sunday's game against the Raptors was pretty bad, but I think any of these games in this stretch without Miles Turner have to be taken with some skepticism, have to be viewed kind of in that context of the Pacers probably second best player when you combine defense and offense and overall two-way ability. Best player has missed four straight games, and yes, this team has been worse. I know at one point this season I said Sabonis needs to play more and needs to start more. With that point, I didn't necessarily mean there needs to be no Miles Turner or Turner needs to play less. What I meant was Sabonis needs to play with Turner more, and Turner, well, I might not think he should have been a starter at some point. That's obviously changed. He's played incredible in the last month, so I've changed that, though. Like, he definitely should be starting over Sabonis. It's clear. The way he plays defensively, all that stuff, it's very clear. But it doesn't mean Sabonis shouldn't play more minutes, but not having Turner is critical to this team because he is the defensive enforcer, might be even the right word. I don't know. He's not like, you know, an enforcer in the more traditional way where he doesn't, like, beat up a guy or whatever, but he is the guy who protects his defense, I guess is the right way to put it. You know why? Because when the guards out there or Bojan or even Thad are out there playing defense on the perimeter, Turner is their safety valve. He's what deters guys from trying to drive in. He's what forces guys to think twice about going to the lane, instead settle for some long jump, three-point jump shot or a mid-range jump or whatever it is. And then combined with the fact that Turner can play stretch five, he can guard centers who can shoot the three, which is critical against both Toronto and Boston and why they lost both games. And he can be switched on the guys and all the little things he does that as a just being out there and as a stretch five kind of more than Sabonis can do things that are different. Now, again, like I said, it doesn't mean that Sabonis shouldn't play more minutes. I'm just thinking that Turner has for the past 5 weeks has been the second best player on this team in terms of overall game. I think Sabonis still might be the second best offensive player on this team, but Turner has been the second best overall player because his defense is so valuable and it's been highlighted by his absence. So some numbers that are probably obvious and so small sample size that I'm not sure you can really like read too much into them, but in the three games Turner has missed, so that's Toronto, Cleveland, and Boston now, and it's still questionable whether he's going to play against the Knicks. I don't think he's been ruled out yet, but we don't know yet. The Pacers are giving up 123.7 points per game with a defensive rating of 125.3. Before Turner, the previous 38 games with Turner, well, I know he missed one, so we'll say 37, but over 38 games, the Pacers had a defensive rating of 102.5, so 23 points less, and were giving up roughly 101.4 points per game, which is about 22 points less. Now, there's some context here. One, the Pacers played two of the best teams, if not in the NBA, in the Eastern Conference, in both Boston and Toronto. I know Toronto was down Kawhi, but this is still two really good teams who obviously can take advantage of mismatches and weaknesses, and another team to an extreme can really highlight, you know, when your team is really bad, something highlight it, and without Turner, the Pacers' D is clearly worse. I know some of the Pacer players will say, well, without Turner, we still have to be able to kind of play good defense, you know, it's no excuse, whatever, with Oladipo, we still won a bunch of games, but Boston and Toronto have really good coaches, and they do a really good job of, you know, exploiting your team's weakness, and when you don't have your best, you know, defensive player, let's say, I mean, I think Turner is the Pacers' best defensive player, and they don't have the guy who the whole defense is built around, there becomes a lot of holes to exploit, and it's hard to fill those up in such a short period of time. You know, yeah, the Pacers had a month without Turner. They might figure it out. But they're not going to figure it out in 4 days. And considering, like I said, that he might play Friday, they don't have a need to necessarily adjust right away because they know he's coming back. Now, that doesn't mean the Pacers shouldn't beat New York, who I'll talk about later in the show. It means they should have beat the Cavs, which they did. You know, you should still beat the bad teams without Turner, but it's hard to go against the best teams in the conference without one of your best players. You know, Philadelphia did the same thing earlier this season against the Pacers, where they were without Jimmy Butler, who, yes, he was new to the team, but he's one of their best players out here, and they struggled against the Pacers. Now, I think that was an indication of why, you know, that game, which was a great moral win for the Pacers, should be taken count with a grain of salt because they didn't have Jimmy Butler, obviously. But it's the same kind of concept. The Pacers not having Turner really sets this team back, also because of the ancillary problems it caused to the bench unit because he has to play Kyle O'Quinn. And it's just, it's a whole mess of things. And it just sort of affects this team in a way that is pretty obvious. I mean, I don't think anything I'm saying is too revolutionary or hot takey or new to anybody out there who watched the Pacers. It's pretty obvious, you know. Turner's not playing. Now you got Kyle Quinn playing. The team is worse. Now you got T.J. Leaf playing more minutes. The team is worse. I know Leaf's been decent, but overall the team is worse. And Sabonis isn't quite the overall player Sabonis has or Turner has been the last month or so. And so you can see this drop off, you know. So I'm going to read off some more defensive stats, and what I want to make clear is these stats, they don't explain anything. What you're seeing with your eyes explains what's happening, you know what I mean? Like, the obvious thing I just said, explain what happens. These stats are just kind of, they show the problem. So we already know the Pacers giving up so many points. Well, some of these stats just kind of show, okay, that's where the problem, this is the stats that are happening because of those issues that we see with our eyes. For example, Sabonis in the three games without Turner, a defensive rating of nearly 127 points, or 128 points, or 127.9. Turner, before then, 101 points defensive rating. That's a 27-point difference. I don't think that shows that, you know, Sabonis is 27 points worse defensive rating-wise than Turner, but I think it's a indication that when he's on the court, the team is not that good defensively compared to they were when Turner was there. You know, another player has a really bad defensive rating. I mean, really, all the starters do, but Thad Young has 132.1. You've got Oladipo 127.7, Collison 127.3, and Bowen 124.6. All those guys were in the low 100s. I think some of them were even in the, like, the high 90s. Well, they're actually all between 100.9, which is where Thad was, and Collison at 102.9. Again, these are all stats that show the starters have been the issue, but it's... Is it because of Turner kind of not being there? I think it is. I think Turner really sort of is like the last piece that locks in this D, and Sabonis can't quite do that. But part of it, too, is because they played better teams, like I said. And there's a lot of other factors, but those stats clearly show the starters are where they're struggling, and then it kind of has this wave kind of effect where it pushes down the bench unit, and then that kind of leads to, you know, not having Sabonis makes a worse bench unit. And then, for example, if somebody else gets hurt, they don't have another guy. So, like, let's say Sabonis got hurt. I don't know if they do it center. Like, it's all these issues that could pop up, and the solution is hopefully Turner comes back on Friday. I think things are rather mixed without him, but hopefully we'll talk about that later. But you know, hopefully he comes back and they can kind of adjust back to normal. Now I worry with Turner if he can kind of stay at his, I would say, what was defensive player of the year type level, all-star level where he was in December because of all these injuries. He's got the broken nose, got the shoulder. Those are two kind of issues where, yeah, maybe each one knocks him down 10%, so now he's 80% of the player that he was healthy wise. You know, the nose didn't affect him by itself, but when you add in the shoulder, it's just a bunch of pain. He's in pain, whatever it is, and that's an issue. You know, you have these compounding injuries that just can be debilitating to a big man like him, especially, you know, the bad shoulder, the bad nose can lead to worse vision, and then he's doing other things. You know, he's compensating with his other shoulders, can affect his elbow, which he had injuries in the past on. And the nose could be, you know, could be part of the concussion. I mean, it could be a head injury that he's had before. Like, it's all these little things that just keep adding up. And obviously, I understand when they haven't played him. I think the nose part of this, I don't think his nose is that badly broken. Like, in terms of, you know, when you break your nose, you get it fixed right away. I think he's okay. But I think having both those injuries gives him a decent reason to say, hey, just sit out, let the nose heal, let the shoulder heal, and then you'll play. And we'll wait till you're feeling comfortable, you're not just playing through pain to play when you won't be that good. So we'll see if he plays on Friday. I don't really have any indication of where it's heading right now, but the team's pretty secret of that kind of stuff. If I had to guess, he wouldn't play Friday, and then he'll play the Pacers next game, which I believe is next Monday or Tuesday. I'll look at the schedule on that one. But if I had to guess, that would happen. Give him a week off. The nose should be pretty much healed. Shoulders should be pretty much healed, and he'll be ready to go. Now I'll say a quick pause once again, and then on the other side of this break, I'm going to talk about the Knicks preview and talk Tim Hardaway trades. If you listen to Monday's podcast, you notice that I'm a big fan of Tim Hardaway trades. Now, I get some of this because a lot of Bill Simmons' podcasts, and he's big on him, but I had a little more deeper dive. So I know Simmons had, keeps saying, well, Hardaway's the number one option for this team. That's why he's playing so bad. That's kind of true. You look at some of the stats, so like look at close defender stats. Hardaway has very similar numbers in terms of percentage-wise to Bojan Bogdanovic. So, for example, he is about 5% of the time on Hardaway shot the defender within 2 feet. 15% of the time defender within 2 feet. 35% he's within 2 to 4 feet. Bojan, who is the Pacers' kind of number two option, which is kind of where Hardaway would fit, the 2 to 3, has about 12% of the time a defender within 2 feet, and 36% of the time it's within 2 to 4 feet, so very close on that. So I don't know if that's Tim Hardaway's issue. However, I do think Tim Hardaway has value. I know his contract is, I think, 2 years, about $18 million each year left. But he has value, in my opinion, simply because he's a guy that has size, can probably play in big moments. And if you're the Pacers, you have this cap space. I don't know what you're going to use it on. And you have a player who you're probably willing to dump in Tyreke Evans. And so I know Tony is big on this cap space type of stuff, but I'm not sure why you would have the cap space. You know what I mean? I'm not sure, a lot of teams in this league this summer will have cap space. And Indiana doesn't get big free agents, so half the time the cap space doesn't mean anything. So they should use that future cap space to go get a guy, right? They should combine the Tyree contract, which is expiring, which is technically cap space, I would say, because it's going to lead to a $14 million hole in the salary cap next year. They should use that contract, combine maybe Kyle Quinn, whatever it is, to go and get a player who can play in rotation minutes and who can help this team win in the playoffs, which I don't think Tyreke or Kyle Quinn's going to end up doing in the playoffs. I think Tyreke's the first guy out of the rotation in the playoffs, in my opinion. As soon as he starts to struggle, he's gone. So Hardaway's contract past this year is about 2 years, 18.1, and then 18.9. To make the trade happen this year, you probably have to do Tyreke and Kyle Quinn for him. That would, I think, be fine for the Pacers. I think the Knicks would get rid of Hardaway in a heartbeat for anything, or expirings at least, because they want to, free up cap space. And Hardaway could fit in off the bench. I think he certainly has his weaknesses, and he's not, just like Tyreke, he's not like the greatest player, and he's going to have his problem. But I feel like if the guy is given opportunities to play with units, with Sabonis, and given units where he's not the number one, but he's more like number two or even number three option, he's going to get cleaner looks. He's going to have a better year. I mean, he might have more like he had with Atlanta. So before he went to New York, Hardaway had a pretty good run with Atlanta for a couple years in 17-18 and 16-17. He had a pretty good run where he was shooting about 45-36 and averaging 14.5 points and 3 rebounds a game. Now, the overall field percentage isn't great, but he was taking 5 threes a game and shooting them at 36%, which is pretty good. And 45 isn't a terrible field goal percentage. And so I think those kind of numbers, I get you're overpaying for them. I get that's probably, if we put up those numbers again, let's say he's probably worth, I would say, 10 million, probably not 19. But you're overpaying because you're paying the Indiana tax. You're paying the Indiana because it's impossible to get a free agent here. You're paying the tax to go after get a guy before. And, I get he's probably not the perfect fit, and there's maybe better guys you'd want out there, but it's hard to go after guys. It's hard to get rotation pieces. Like, I think it's underrated. It's like, how hard it is to get a rotation piece, really? Like, a guy who can play in the playoffs and you can, you somewhat trust him. And Hardaway, I think, is one of those guys that's proven it with Atlanta back in the day. He proved it when he played for Atlanta in the 16-17 season. Really played in the playoffs 2 years, but you look at his playoff stats per se, and they're decent. I mean, he put up 12.8 points in six games in a playoff run in 16-17. His shooting weren't great, but he was a scorer off the bench. I just think he has value. I get that he isn't the greatest player and whatever it is, but I think he has value with the right team. And I get you're overpaying him. I keep saying that I get you're overpaying him and whatever it is. but I'm not sure why the Pacers are hoarding cap space. Now, there might be other guys there that are worth getting for the same $19 million. Now, that you could talk me into. But you get Kyle, you can get Tim Hardaway Jr. on the cheap for Kyle O'Quinn and Tyreek Evans probably right now. And he's a player who can play in the rotation, and he can be valuable, and he's got size, and he's just got things that make him worth having on this roster that a guy like Tyreek, who was just being a negative, you know, and maybe Hardaway would be a negative and get, then you have 2 years of negativeness, right? But I just have a feeling that if you put him on a good role with the Pacers, he could be almost in a what we wanted from GR3 role or something like that. Like, you know, I get he's not going to start, but he could be, you know, your insurance policy if Bojan leaves, or he could be a backup in case of injury or whatever it is. But he has, I think he has that ability, and I get some of the metrics don't look great out there for him. But from watching the Pacers play in the next couple of times, I mean, he's had pretty good games against the Pacers this season. They played twice already, and if I pull up his stats real fast from those Pacers games, he had 37 in that first one, which I thought was really impressive, and then he had 19 in the other one. And that one in 37, he shot 10 of 19, which is like an Oladipo night. And, you know, he'd have to be willing to accept a smaller role, and that's hard for a guy like him. It's, you know, that might not adjust him, and that could be the difference. But, and that's Tyreek, he just could have some of the same problems. But I think he's worth the risk. Because I don't think he's untradeable again. And again, I think the Pacers have the problem. They're going to sit here next summer, and, you know, they're going to sign Sabonis to an extension, eat up some cap space, and they're going to re-sign Bojan, and I don't know if they'll have cap space then, right? You know, if they do, it's going to be so little, it's not going to matter. You know, they're not going to have max cap space per se if they want to actually have a roster that can compete for the playoffs next year. They're not. I mean, they're going to re-sign, they're going to put Sabonis on an extension, and they're going to put Turner's extension will kick in, and they're going to bring back Bojan, and then we're going to bring back Joseph probably, and it's eat up some of their cap space. So all I'm saying is I think the Pacers have to make a move before the February, at the February deadline, before free agency next summer, and I think this is a move they should look at. Now, like I said on Monday's podcast, feel free to tweet all your free agent questions at Tony, TEastNBA. Give him anything you have, all the questions you got. I think he would love them. I say that sarcastically, because obviously he was pissed about that. Not happy to hear that I was directing free agent questions towards him, but do that anyways. It was TEastNBA sent him on those free agent questions. But I think Hardaway is worth looking at, and they play the Knicks, so I wanted to kind of look at him. And so let's do a Knicks preview real fast. Knicks are not very good. We did it on Monday. They are one of the worst teams in the NBA. Their stats are, ratings-wise, are 25th in offense and 29th in defense, which is, let's say it's miserable. That's pretty miserable. They are 10-31. They are in the 13th in the Eastern Conference right now. They are in what's called the all-in for Zion mode. What was it? It used to be suck for luck, so now this is suck for Zion, I guess. They are bad. They're bad. They want to find a guy to play to Porzingis. They want a free agent. You know, there's a world out there where they are able to dump some money. They get the number one pick. Kristaps comes back. They sign Kevin Durant, and they get Zion Williamson. I mean, that's a team that could make us some noise in the playoffs and probably win the – that team would probably win the East. I mean, this year and probably next year, depending where Boston is. Best player, Tim Hardaway. He's been their best player all year. I think it's questionable whether Enes Kanter plays, but I think he's been sick. So that's kind of a question. I know that listed on Roto World, so that's where I get that fact from. Mitch Robinson's listed day-to-day as of Tuesday, and so is Frankie Nicotine. Oh, he looked out for Tuesday's game. Both guys missed the game, but Robinson's day-to-day, and Nicotine is listed as out. That has a huge difference. In previous games, guys who Pacers struggled against was Noah Vonleh, who had a pretty good run against the Pacers. He had a lot of rebounds. This is the type of game where I'm assuming Turner doesn't play. You know, Sabonis played really good against the Knicks last time, and I think this team have no trouble. They won't quite get exploited the way they were against Boston and Toronto because this team doesn't really have a small ball center. Now, if Kristaps was healthy, he'd be that guy. So they should be able to play traditional, play the Knicks straight up, even play a little Quinn, and they should be fine. This is why I doubt Turner plays, because I think the Knicks are Knicks are kind of more old school with their centers. I mean, they've got Vonleh, they've got Kanter out there, they got Robinson, all guys who aren't let's call it stretch threes per se, or stretch fives who can shoot the three. Sorry, so. I think they should be okay against the Knicks without Turner, but we will see what happens there. Other guy to look at, Emmanuel Mudiay, has been playing really well of late. Picked him up on my fantasy team. We'll break down some of his stats real quick over the last, I think, 10 games. They've been pretty solid. So you take Emmanuel Mudiay's last 10 games. You get 16.6 points, 5.7 assists on 42-27 shooting. So not the greatest percentage-wise, but he's putting up points. Take his last 12 games, it's 18.2 points per game. So he's had a pretty good kind of run here. I know he's had a good little fantasy run for me on my fantasy roster that really matters for the NBA. But the Knicks are bad. Pacers beat the Knicks. Gives on ESPN. They'll probably struggle. And they'll probably have to pull it out, you know, on a last-second Oladipo, whatever thing. But it should be a good game in Madison Square Garden. That should mean, you know, you get the best out of Oladipo, maybe. You maybe get a 35-point Oladipo game, something like that. But it's interesting to see because this would be kind of a bounce-back game for the Pacers after such a terrible performance against Boston. And that could be an issue for sure. For the Knicks, at least, it's not an issue for the Pacers, an issue for the Knicks because the Pacers will come out pretty mad and could kind of roll over this team. The Locked On Pacers podcast will be back on Saturday afternoon with a podcast breaking down the next game and previewing some of, I guess not the next week. We'll probably just do some evergreen content again. That'll be me again on Saturday. Check out that podcast. And then Tony and I will be back on Monday with our weekly show as always. You can follow our podcast at Locked On Pacers, me at FreedomAdam5. Thank you for listening to this Locked On Pacers podcast. And as always, have a great rest of your day.